Welcome back, everybody, to A Cast in the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today, we're going to be talking about another indie classic game. It's a little over 3 years old.
Yep, which is the cutoff for being a candidate on this show. And yeah, Josh, we just love our indie games on A Cast of the Past, don't we?
I mean, indie games are some of the best games. Two of my favorite games of all time are indie games. So, I mean,
yep,
I'll allow it.
Indie games are tight. And Josh, today, what are we talking about?
Today, we're talking about Team Cherry's Hollow Knight.
Yes, the 2017 Metroidvania spooky, atmospheric, kind of adorable adventure game.
Yeah, I would call it a Metroidvania Souls-like. Very similar Metroid, Castlevania, Dark Souls. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's not like Dark Souls, it's nothing like Dark Souls. Well, guess what? It is. Listen, I've played the Dark Souls games. I played a bunch of the Souls games. It is.
He's beaten them. He's beaten them and Cuphead, so he's the expert. Well, Josh, to get going on this, would you be okay if I brought back a little bit of a retired segment that I think we all know and love as the Nitty Gritty?
Oh, nitty gritty.
Hell yeah, baby. This is a short one because it's an indie game, so a lot of the development details are very minute. So Hollow Knight was released for Windows on February 24th, 2017, and later on Mac OS, Linux, the Switch, PS4, and Xbox One. Developed, published, and designed by Team Cherry, this is their first major game. It is basically the brainchild, specifically, of Ari Gibson and William Pellen. Josh, did you play this game upon its initial release?
I did not. I actually played it first on the Nintendo Switch. So I think the Switch copy came out in like June of 2018. It was a little bit after that when I played it. I think I got it on sale for like $7 one day. And I was like, you know what? I'll play it while I'm on the go.
I mean, what else is a Switch for?
Mm. Mario Kart.
Well, true. Those are the two games it's for. Hollow Knight and Mario Kart. No other reason to own a Switch.
That's it.
I also played it on the Switch. I would not be surprised if a lot of listeners today experienced this for the first time on the Switch, because while it was popular upon its initial release, this kind of blew up. I was doing some research on Gibson and Pellen and their backstory for this episode, and I read like an interesting article that surmised their history with the game, and they were just like, you know, when we realized we were at the top of the Nintendo eShop, we knew that we had made it. And it was, so that's a pretty incredible thing for a first major game.
Very similar to Super Meat Boy. Remember, like, they were a little nitty-gritty team, you know, just up-and-comers. And then once they were on the main page of Xbox, you know what I mean? It just blew up the Xbox store.
That's when you know you've arrived.
But so how did you first hear about Hollow Knight, Tom? Let's start there.
I think this, for me, was just a lot of word of mouth, and maybe I saw it prominently placed within the eShop. You know, I run in a lot of gaming Facebook groups, and I try to keep up on gaming news sites, so I can only imagine I saw, like, a degree of acclaim and buzz for this title, and I saw it and was like, well, I need some indie games for the Switch, so I picked it up in late 2018, and man, I couldn't put it down for the longest time. This is just an enchanting and addicting game.
This was the game I played right after Celeste. So when I beat Celeste, I was like, I jumped right into this and I was like, wow. Well, Celeste was such an uplifting story. This is the complete opposite. And I remember watching a lot of stuff on E3, because I think E3 2018, when they were announcing that it was coming to the Switch, they were talking about one of their DLCs. And I was like, oh, this game kind of looks cool. They said it's like really difficult, and it was a Metroidvania style game. And I'm like, oh, okay, you have my attention. I didn't know it was anything like Souls-like games, so the first time playing through this, you don't really know that much of the story, you don't really know what to do, you're pretty much equipped with the jump button and your nail, which is your sword in the game, and just go figure out the world. And it's very similar to Metroid, it's very similar to some of the Castlevanias. Like, we're going to say Metroidvania and Souls-like very, very often in this episode, But
so hope you have a drink with you to take a shot every time.
Yeah, but it really is.
Absolutely. And you know, I wanted to just follow up. You know, Josh, you mentioned that the main character's weapon is called the nail. I think it's important to emphasize that this is a game in which the hero and the entire world they explore is an insect kingdom. These are all little tiny little characters that range the whole kind of population of bugdom. It's what if A Bug's Life was directed by Tim Burton, basically.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I did see, though, did you know that like part of this game was funded through Kickstarter?
A little bit of it, yeah. I have a couple notes on the, we'll call them Hollow Knight Origins, if you're interested. Would you like me to dump that on you and the listeners?
Let's talk about the origin a little bit here, and then we'll dive into our experience with the game.
All right. So Hollow Knight was actually conceived in 2013 at Ludum Dare, which is a game jam event. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard of a game jam before, Josh, have you?
No, I heard of the Boom Boom Huck Jam from Tony Hawk. That was a traveling skateboarding tour.
Okay, well, not related, but they both incorporate jam. So
okay.
That's the only connector. I don't know if they have any particular jams. I don't know if they like jam over jelly, but Let 'em Dare was a game jam, and a game jam is similar to like a 48-hour film festival. It's where creators get together, they get a prompt, and over the course of a weekend, in the game jam's sense, you have to build a completely functional and working video game. So at this game jam, Ari Gibson and William Pellin developed a top-down game called Hungry Knight, and it literally starred the knight that we know as the protagonist of this game. It was the same design all the way through, and it was about killing bugs to avoid starvation in this kind of desolate landscape. And they published it on Newgrounds, and it accumulated a average rating of 1 out of 5. So people just were not into it, but they figured they kind of had something. And the way that Hollow Knight kind of more fully got birthed was Gibson and Pellin were not able to attend another game jam, but they heard what the theme was, and that theme was called Beneath the Surface. So they're both fans of classic Nintendo games, and they figured that Ant Hives have the same kind of maze-like structure as Metroid and Castlevania games. So they were like, we have this little dude, he's bug-sized, let's make this a Metroidvania about bugs, essentially.
So I can understand why it received a 1 out of 5 on Newgrounds. It's because there was no dress up or undress of a GIF character or JPEG.
Not enough nudity, yes.
There's not enough nudity for Newgrounds. So let me just talk about one thing about this game, though. It's the scale. Right. When you think of Metroidvania games, you think of, you know, just certain areas here, there that you go to. And it's, you know, you go through one door and you end up in a new section and stuff like that. The massive scale of this map is ridiculous. For their first time out of the gates making a game like this, how intricate every level is, how intricate each section of that world is. There is so much in this game, and there's constantly new secrets being uncovered, and you just got to look out for everything. When you think like, oh, what's over there? Oh crap. It keeps going. Oh crap. Like I'm like 3 sections into this level now. Right. Or when you're looking at your map and you see like, there's a weird circle there. And I feel like there could be something, but I'm not sure. And then all of a sudden, like you break a floor and then now you're in a completely new section of this game. The scale and mass of this game is just ridiculous and unheard of. And it really does seem like it's kind of like a hive or like an ant farm. You know what I mean? How they're just constantly building and burrowing tunnels underground.
Absolutely agree with you, Josh. I could not have phrased it better. And here's the crazy thing, Josh. There was an additional huge extra area that they had to cut from the game. Like that's how big this game almost was.
Oh, man.
But you know, so the levels were designed to be very large on purpose. They wanted to not only instill a sense of wonder, but they really wanted you to explore. They just wanted to cut you loose in this game, and they wanted the reward to be the things you found along the way. So they developed 5 of these big, massive, interconnected areas. And then they went to Kickstarter, basically for completion funding. And they didn't ask for a lot. They had a very modest goal, but they ended up exceeding their projection. And that allowed them to hire two new staff members to help Ari and William, technical director David Kazi and composer slash sound designer Chris Larkin. Now, I think all of them did a fantastic, significant job. And any other, team members, whether they be freelance or anything else who helped the Team Cherry, you all did a spectacular job. If I had to personally just name two MVPs of those four, I'm not trying to be like selfish or anything, but I'm just trying to give credit where credit is due. Ari Gibson's art style, which influenced the entire look of this game, and Chris Larkin's sound design and composition work, they're two of the biggest things that stick out for me. How about you, Josh?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's one place in this game that it really comes at you so hard.
Okay, on the count of three, let's see if we say the same thing at the same time. Ready?
Okay.
One, two, three. City
Deep
of Tears.
Nest. Oh.
Okay. All right, so tell me what you love about Deep Nest.
It's so spooky. It's so scary. It's so unsettling. The sound designs of the spiders coming from every aspect. And I know how you are with game spiders. How on a scale of 1 to 10, Tom, how scary are these spiders in this game?
Well, they're a little less intimidating than, say, the Resident Evil 2 spiders because they're not going for ultra realism. Still creepy, you know.
What about when they come off of somebody's head? When you kill somebody and they come out of their head?
I didn't love it.
That area, like, for how it's just a 2D cartoonish style game, you feel like you're constantly being followed or you're constantly being watched when you're in that area. And guess what? You are, because if you start walking down, spiders from the background start coming in to your area and you just can't escape it. Like, I got goosebumps right now because it's like you're feeling like you're constantly being just followed and harassed and it's so creepy and so scary. And then you got the weird worm tunnel things inside there too that are blocking you. I think Deep Nest is probably the most standout part of this entire game. City of Tears is beautiful. Don't get me wrong. It is beautiful. But I think Deep Nest is really the... If you want to put somebody in, like, how can a game like this be scary? Drop them right into Deep Nest.
Deep Nest in this game reminds me of the film The Descent. You know, just being plunged into this dark, cavernous hellscape.
Yeah, so tight, yeah. so narrow.
Anything can get you at any moment. And, you know, a couple of the levels we're going to talk about in this game are admittedly creepy and have this a very ominous, dark vibe. But it's still got so many levels that just shine even through some of the kind of sadness of the game. And it's not like a completely spoopy game. You know, you're not going to play this and be miserable. But I agree that Deep Nest is a hell of a candidate. For me, City of Tears, I love its gorgeously thought out architecture. I like how it's in this constant, never-ending, just kind of like light rainstorm. And there's just this gorgeous choral track in the background. And as you walk through this abandoned city, or sometimes not abandoned, because when you do find citizens, they come after you. But, you know, you'll walk by a traveler sitting on a park bench, just looking out of a big window, just taking in the sight of the rain. And, like, I literally just, like, sat my character down on the bench next to him and just, like, left him there for a little bit. And I just watched. I watched that ambiance, that kind of atmosphere. It's great. This game's chock full of it.
Now, one thing I will talk about, though, we talk about Deep Nest being scary. We talk about City of Tears being beautiful and just the atmosphere to it being great. My thing with the game is, though, the lighter an area is, the more unsettling I thought it was. So when you're in the Queen's Garden, it always just felt like there was something off when you were there. Like, it was inhabited, but not for a really long time. Like, there's something there. And that when you get there and you see those things, like, hiding in the, you know, the ceiling and stuff like that, waiting for you. And I just think it's cool that all those areas that are very well lived in, they're also gloomy, but these places that have been left for so long feels like there's something there, but it's just like, it's quiet, too quiet, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with you. So just to give a little context, we're gushing about individual areas that make up the Kingdom of Hollownest, which is the world that we're exploring in this game. It's a somewhat abandoned and forgotten kingdom that was once inhabited by bugs of all sorts. They lived and worked together in several different areas, some of which we've been discussing. And Josh, let's talk about like the way you traverse and interact with this world. It's whatever beauty the world once held, it's like, as you said, kind of decayed, and it's filled with a lot of baddies and monsters. So let's talk about combat. What's the combat in this game like, Josh?
Combat's very similar to a normal like hack and slash game, you know, but it's one of those easy to use, difficult to master type things where it's just, you can just slash away all you want. However, if you know where to go, you can develop techniques and different ways of fighting enemies. You have your nail. You will actually be able to gain the power to use some of your souls that you have to use it towards magic, to use towards people.
Right. So basically, anytime you take a whack at an enemy and like connect, this little orb next to your health meter will fill up with kind of like a white liquid. And that's soul energy, more or less. And as Josh said, that's kind of like mana for magic based attacks.
Mm-hmm. Which you can use to, you know, revive your health, or you can use it to fight. But inside there, too, there's also the charms that you can purchase and receive and find. And those charms give you things like showing you where you are in the map, or, you know, making you a little bit more stronger, or making you a little bit more weaker, however, giving you more powerful attacks. Like there's so many different things, and trying to figure out almost your loadout. Like what do you want to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause the charms, as you're discussing, they're similar. If you play Final Fantasy VII, to, you know, the orbs and relics you can slot into Cloud's Buster Sword. Similar concept. The more you have, and as Jess said, the combinations you work with, you can basically customize your own kind of gameplay advantage.
There's other features that you get in the game, too. Like, you get the Monarch Wings, so you can actually fly a little bit higher. You get the Moth Cloak, where you can do a quick dash. There's also the dark version of it, where you can go in between the dark worlds that are blocking out certain areas of the map, which are a little bit more difficult to get into. You have the dream nail, which you can go and collect pretty much dream soul stuff that you can redeem for more charms and more money and more, so many other things. But there's way, way too much in this game, and I love it. And I think it's really worth the value.
Coolest power up.
I mean, Wait, what are we talking about power up?
Well, for me, let me just elaborate.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the coolest unlockable power up ability, whatever you want to call it, is the kind of supercharged flight dash. So you get this in Crystal Peaks, and what it allows you to do is you charge up a bit of soul and then you launch, and then Hollow Knight will soar across the level in whatever direction you launch. And they won't stop until you let them. And there's like certain instances of the game where you're like, you can just launch Hollow Knight. Sorry, well, the main character is not Hollow Knight. I'm messing up there, because Hollow Knight plays into the plot. The Knight. The Knight can just soar through past so many beautiful vistas and just gorgeous pieces of scenery. And for me, like, I just would love like just going somewhere I know looked cool and just charging up and launching myself just to like watch the scenery pass by.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my favorite probably was the dash, because then when you get the charm where you can dash and not get hurt, it made you feel so much more powerful, where you could hit, dash, hide, poof, go here, jump up, come down, do, dash again. Like, it added so much more variety to your fighting style. But that's just me. But throughout this game, no matter, like, we talk about how it feels like very narrow and empty and whatnot, there are some pretty good NPCs in this game, right?
Oh, right. We're not trying to say that, like, you're the only living creature besides enemies. This is populated with a lot of great characters.
And so who's your favorite character, Tom?
Well, Hornet is so interesting and so cool, and I love that she's getting her own sequel game, Hollow Knight Silksong, coming out hopefully next year. It was supposed to come out this year, but I don't think that's happening
anymore. Oh, yeah, so was the Cuphead DLC.
Yeah, but Hornet is kind of like this game's version of, like, Proto Man, or maybe, you know...
Black Knight?
Black Knight from Shovel Knight? Yep, absolutely. They are, you know, a hero with their own mission, and they kind of see you as in the way, but they start to slowly kind of respect you and realize, oh, you could be an ally. And she's just got this incredible moveset. Anytime you have to face her, it's always one of, like, some of the best combat in the game. So Hornet's a very cool character off the top of my head. What about you, Josh?
Oh, come on. We all know it's the mighty Zolt.
Here's the thing. There's just so many good characters in this game that, like, if the grubs. Can we talk about the grubs?
The grubs are adorable. They were a collectible that I wanted to go find.
Yeah. So this game's version of, like, say, the Koroks from Breath of the Wild. There are these little baby worms that are, like, stuck. Either, like, they're imprisoned or they're trapped and they can't get out of where they are, all over the Hollow Nest. And it's your job to free them so they can get back to the place where they chill with the... What's the grub papa's name? I don't know off the top of my head.
Oh, I don't remember.
But it's so, like, just emotionally striking, because when you first enter their kind of nest, the big, I'm just going to call him Grub Papa. Grub Papa is, like, he's crying. He's really sad. And he's like, oh, my friends, they've been taken. And then as you start seeing them throughout the game, you'll hear them. They're like, and you free them, and then they disappear. And then eventually, like, after you saved a couple, you go back to the nest and... Grub Papa's happy, and all the grubs who are back are happy too, and he gives you tons of money for every kind of percentage point you pass, like 10% of grubs saved, making it rain. So, yeah.
Grub Father is his name.
I wasn't that far off.
No, not at all.
I'm still calling him Grub Papa. That's his new official headcanon name for me.
But Zolt the Mighty was my man. Cornifer was awesome, and his wife with the donk at the shop. Bompanada, am I right?
They have the weirdest kind of marriage. Like, he's out drawing maps of the whole kingdom, and she's just bored and alone back at the shop and kind of just, like, over his crap. It's like, oh my god, like, can you just leave? Like, why are you here for longer than 5 minutes? Go make your maps. Meanwhile, he's loving it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Can we talk about my boy, the little pill? Like, music cues, seriously. Yeah. So Cornifer hums, you know, when you're getting close to him, when you'll be able to buy a map because you hear his humming. And then can we talk about my little boy, the pill bug, in the tunnel outside the mines of Crystal Peaks?
Yummy.
He's trying to dig his own tunnel. He wants to, like, open his own mine. And he's just, every time you walk past that area, he's there. Yummy. Just like... picking at the tunnel.
And then he turns against you, though, because he goes crazy.
Well, yes, throughout the course of the game, when everything goes to hell, yeah, unfortunately he does.
I mean, how do you want to talk about the plot of this game?
See, to me, I'll be honest with you, the plot, which is interesting, it's not the most interesting part of the game for me. You know,
no, I think traversing the land was, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's very heavy on its own lore, and it's not bad. It's interesting. Do you want to try to break it down into as little sentences as possible? I think I could try. Do you want to give it a shot first?
I mean, so this is my take on it. Okay, Hollow Nest has gone to crap. Okay, and there is a all-knowing being locked away inside of this tomb. And what you need to do is you need to go and defeat the three pretty much bad guys of this world to unlock the chains that are blocking this creature. And then you need to go in and destroy this creature that's causing all of the chaos in the world. There's probably way more deep lore to it, but I mean, on the outside, without getting super in-depth nerdy and making you want to turn off this podcast, I mean, what do you think, Tom?
Well, for the Hollow Knight fans, I think maybe it's worth, because did you get the 100% ending of this, Josh?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
I admittedly did not either, but I was interested enough to look into it, and it's hard as hell just looking at it. But basically, the reason Hollow Nest went to crap is that the citizens, the bugs, they originally were part of this like hive mind, and they followed this moth-like being known as the Radiance. And the Radiance was just like, you know, you'll live in my world and you'll do what I want. And then the first king of Hollow Nest kind of came to power, and he's like, I want everyone to be individuals and be free. So he worked with, like, you know, magic and a bunch of other shenanigans, and eventually he was able to give this being known as the Hollow Knight the power to lock the Radiance away into a tomb, which is what you mentioned. But Hollow Nest just started to wither from there. And it's kind of because, like, the seal wasn't perfect. So, as you said, our main character comes into Hollow Nest. It's gone to shit. And they have to, A, defeat the three dreamers, as you mentioned. They're kind of these ethereal beings that are still hanging around, left over from the days of the Radiance. And then once access to the tomb is open, they have to defeat the Hollow Knight because the seal wasn't perfect and the Hollow Knight's causing that. So when the Knight defeats Hollow Knight, all seems well, but then you find out that, like, in defeating Hollow Knight, now the Radiance is free again. And so you and Hornet have to go through a series of shenanigans, ultimately facing the Radiance, and the Radiance is defeated, but your character, the Knight, who I forgot to mention, was one of the king's earlier versions of, like, the seal. You know, like, you as the Knight could have been the Hollow Knight, but, like, you know, you weren't capable. But you defeat the Radiance, then your character kind of disappears. It's like, oh, what happened? No one knows. They both kind of, like, took each other out. And then that's the 100% ending of this game.
Yeah, my ending was I defeated the Hollow Knight, and I became the new Hollow Knight, pretty much. Like, I took its place.
Okay.
I thought it was a cool ending. I was like, oh, okay, so, like, no matter what, like, you were destined to pretty much take its place, but, like, nothing got better, which was a very dark ending. It's like, oh, like, so it's just destined to get kind of go on and on and on with no good ending in sight. But
yeah, because the lore of the game is basically that as long as there is someone alive in the world who remembers the Radiance, its influence will be able to infiltrate and poison the world.
Let's talk about, like, your favorite areas in the game.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
So we got the plot out of the way. We got NPCs, we got combat and whatnot. What are some of your favorite spots in the game?
I think Crystal Peaks is the most interesting challenge area, if you will.
Like, okay.
Exploring that and adapting to its hazards and its increasingly difficult enemy types, that felt the most exciting and rewarding for me. What about you, Josh?
My favorite was probably when you're down in the Mantis area. I just liked traversing that area, them being hidden everywhere that you're down there. And it's like, that's another area. You felt like you were being watched the entire time. And it's like, oh, crap. Like, it's deadly. They're very tough enemies. They come at you nonstop. And then once you figure out how to beat them and you get down there to a great boss fight, too. It's one of those things, like, once you're done, then they all respect you. And they don't fight you when you go back in. And I'm like, that's awesome. Like, that they know who you are. That the work that you did to get down there meant something to them prior. So, like, you don't need to do that again or every time you go into it. Unless you decide to fight them.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. One of my two favorite boss fights is the Mantis Lords. But before I talk about them, I want to just talk and agree that, like, I think the kind of the Mantis City, which is its own little subset within the world, you know, the Mantises have kind of, like, hold up in their own little, like, area, and they're like, you know, this is us, don't bother us, anybody. I love the design of it because everything is very tall, because the Mantises themselves are, like, tall creatures. They're much taller than you. And it's just such thoughtful design that, you know, they have these tall, narrow rooms in their buildings and tall corridors. Like, that's just the consistency of detail is what I love about this game, even small things like that. But, right, like, the Mantis Lords, they're basically the rulers of the city. There are three of them, and when you enter their arena, you kind of fight them one at a time, but then they start kind of joining in the fight together. And, you know, when we talked earlier about this being a Souls-like game, you know, this is one of, I think, the peak encounters of, like, you've got to really conserve your health, you've got to memorize enemy attack patterns, you've got to have your timing down precisely. And this is just one of those battles that, like, really brought, like, that kind of just need to do that well out of me.
Yeah.
You know, I was...
Yeah. Oof, it was one of those things, like, when you were done, it was like, I felt like I went through war, almost. Like, it was, it felt like a trial to be this soldier, or this just force of just power. And I really like that. And like I said, the aftermath of it, where they all just kind of bow to you every time you get close to them, then it's like, yeah, I screwed some shit up.
No, 100%. And it's never unfair. You know, like, if you are to perish, you kind of acknowledge, all right, they queued up that attack, I didn't prep for it, I know what I did, I gotta go back and do better. I forgot, Josh, this is something I forgot to bring up in gameplay. So dying in this game. So if you fall in battle, you want to talk about what basically happens, Josh?
Yeah, so when you die in battle, you will go ahead and a shadow version of yourself is actually in the where you previously died. And you have to go and defeat it to get all of your money back and your souls. Because if you don't, then you lose all of your money, very similar to losing your souls in Dark Souls or Bloodborne or any of those games. So it's one of those things, like, you can't mess up. And when you go back, you die, you only get, like, a quarter of your health back to get back to where you were, too. So it's one of those things, like, it's very stressful, but...
And, like, say if you were to die on the way to your shadow, like, on the way to fight
everything.
The new shadow overwrites the old one. So, like, if you died with, like, $10,000 in your pocket and then screwed up and died again... that $10,000 is gone. And, like, when it comes to, like, equipment and upgrades in this game, every penny counts. So, like, a loss like that's brutal.
Yeah. Now...
back to bosses. Back to bosses.
Yeah, now let's go... let's head over to bosses. So, my favorite boss fight was the Mantis Lords.
Yes.
What was your favorite boss fight?
It's... for me, it's a tie. It's Mantis Lords and the Soul Master, who is the kind of, he looks a little Dracula-ish. He's towards the top of the City of Tears. He's a big bulbous guy whose attacks revolve around his downward plunge and the shock waves that emit from them. And you fight him in this, like, outdoor, like, basically a thunderstorm. And I just loved the atmosphere and the challenge of that fight. I thought his attack patterns were always super, like, interesting and fun to read. And, yeah, that was probably, like, for me, my favorite boss fight besides the Mantis Lord.
I hated that boss fight. The Soul Master got me. That's probably the boss fight that I redid so many times.
I did too. Yeah.
And getting all the way back up there, climbing that tower every single time, it just took forever to get up there just to get destroyed. And his pattern's so unique. And when you beat him, you go to stage two of him where you have to fight him again. And it's like, oh my God, like, stop. I think my overall though, the Soul Master, I didn't like him and he was hard, but it was like a respected, like, I respect this boss fight.
So I got you. Yeah.
I think the Nosk fight was probably my least favorite. I just that's the creepy, like, stick-like figure that had the Hollow Knight head that turns upside down. It looked like a Hollow Knight, but it was like a shadowy version, like a giant monster version of it. And, like, I hated that one. But the boss characters, though, I mean, they're all so creative. They're all so unique. Like, the False Knight, when you knock off his head and he's a big goofy-looking guy.
Never a repetitive design in this entire game. Like, seriously. Yeah. It's always phenomenal.
Yeah. The Hollow Knight fight at the end. I thought it was actually pretty easy. I think I beat him on my third shot. And once I figured out, like, the one pattern, and when I once, because I at that time you're so good at mastering the dodges and stuff like that, I thought that fight wasn't as terrible. I was like, for an end boss fight, I fought harder things. And if you went and did any of the, you know, the Warrior Dream stuff, like those boss fights, I thought were much harder than the actual Hollow Knight at the end.
Well, I think narratively and game structure wise, I think he's not too much of a challenge on purpose, because there is meant to be more or less another act after he's defeated. It just comes down to if you met the requirements to like go for the real ending. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like logically, yeah, he's not difficult because he's not technically the enemy of the game. So there's that. But I know what you mean. It felt like this weird relief at the end, but also just because it was like, oh, that wasn't as bad as I expected. And then, you know, once I realized, oh, there's so much more and it's so much right. more difficult.
You know? Oh, yeah, there's so much. And the DLCs that they gave you, I think all the DLCs were free, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe they were.
It's crazy. And listen, best deal in gaming. This is on Game Pass right now.
You can get
the complete edition of this game, too.
Hollow Knight on, Voidheart Edition. Absolutely.
On Game Pass. And that's where I went through and I replayed it. On there leading up to us recording this episode here, because like, oh, hey, I hop it right onto my computer, go right onto my Xbox, whatever. Like, just continue playing, enjoy it. What else do we got, Tom?
Well, basically, this game, like I said, it received a ton of critical acclaim, a ton of fan love. You know, this is a game that's developed quite a unique and passionate fan base. There's, like, you know, there's merch. That's how big of an impact it made. Through Fangamer, you can get a Hollow Knight plushie. And as we mentioned, a sequel, Hollow Knight Silksong, which is ideally going to be coming out in 2021, starring the character of Hornet, who we mentioned earlier. And it's a confirmed sequel in terms of the story. So I'm really eager to hear and see what it is going to be about. The thing I think is most interesting about Silksong, Josh, is that the way they described how the level design is going to work. So Hollow Knight, the first game, it's about going underground. It's about exploring the Hollow Nest, going down. Silksong is going to be about Hornet having to like traverse this giant maze-like tower. So it's going to be about going up. So they are literally trying to do something new by just, well, where does this tower go, Josh?
It goes up.
It goes up.
So at the end of the day, now, we didn't get into any of the DLC because there's way, way too much to talk about in the DLC stuff. Would you recommend Hollow Knight?
Without hesitation. This, if you remember, was in my Best of the Decade list when we did that episode at almost a year ago at this point. I love this game. I think this game is just this is one of the few times like a game has ever been perfect, and that's coming from somebody who did not even have the skills enough, I guess, to get the real ending. But still, everything about it, you know, this is a game that's good even if you can't like 100% it. Just the experience alone is worth it. What about you, Josh?
I love Metroidvania games. I'm finding a new respect and fascination with the Souls-like games. I think this game deserves to be played and beat. I don't think you need to go for the 100% completion. I think you're going to ruin your experience playing the game, trying to get everything. You might wear yourself down to the point where when you're done, you're so exhausted that you don't want to play another game like this. I think playing it for the main story, yes, it's not the complete story, but you can definitely find that. That's why people make videos on YouTube, or there's Wikipedia pages, or there's any other, you know, there's an actual Hollow Knight fandom wiki out there that you can get. Give those people some love. Play the game. Get your own experience for it. If you want to continue, push on. Like I said, it's on Game Pass right now for free. For free. It is great. Absolutely. It's wonderful. It's received a lot of great criticism. I think it's sitting in the 80s somewhere, I think, in Metacritic. But, yeah, 87 right? The Switch version got a 90. Like,
gotcha. Yeah,
it's great.
Well deserved. It's a great game. Go play it. Stop. What are you doing? If you're listening and you're already a fan, absolutely please tell us what you think. Engage with us either, you know, in the comments, or if you're watching on YouTube, or hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Let's talk some Hollow Knight. Tell us what you think about the game, what your experiences and memories are. And if you haven't played it yet, please go hurry up and do, and then tell us what you thought, because I would love to just get anyone who's never tried this game before to give it a shot. It's so worth it.
Absolutely. But until next time, this has been Josh.
And Tom.
And we'll see you in the future. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.